Folks, welcome to the show. Today for us, Jim, is the show, the interview. Mm-hmm. It's one we've had on the books for a while, and we've wanted to talk to this person for, I can't even tell you how long, but it's Jessica Lynch. If you don't remember who Jessica is, you will. I mean, you will. You'll know the story. You'll remember it. Things will come back to you. If you're too young and don't remember it and you're listening to this, just listen to what happened to her. She's a U.S. Army soldier that was taken captive by Iraqi soldiers in March of 2003. Jim, I don't know if we need to say anything more other than you got to listen to this interview.
Yes.
When it's done, we are going to come back and wrap it up with our thoughts. Soon as that's done, we'll be right back.
Windows go out to her. It's okay. It's okay.
You know,
you got that flag still?
Still here with you, Jessica.
Sure, we get a good count, guys, as she comes in.
Roger. 3-0.
Thank you.
camera right there?
Can you smile for the family?
So your folks can see
there
how
you
you're
go.
Going? They're going to be
you're
so glad
great,
to see
Jessica.
You.
You're doing great, Jessica.
You're
doing wonderful, okay?
Welcome back.
Just like...
Well, everyone, we are honored. And I say that a lot, but this is, I mean, honestly, and I've been waiting for this particular interview with everybody we interview. I've been waiting for this one. Seriously honored to have with us Jessica Lynch. Now, I'll tell you a little bit about Jessica. If you don't remember or know who she is, it'll come back to you because I think we all do remember who she is and what happened. She currently is an American teacher. We'll get into some details on that. Actress. We'll get into something about that and how that went for you. But most importantly, a former United States Army soldier who served in 2003 in the invasion of Iraq. Almost 21 years ago, on March 23rd, 2003, she was driving as a unit supply specialist with the 507th Maintenance Company. That's when I just want to make sure I'm correct on that, because sometimes the details, I just want to make sure we're good on that. When her convoy was ambushed by Iraqi troops, she was seriously injured. Subsequently, she was taken by Iraqi troops and held hostage, where she was for 7 to 8 days, I believe. Is that correct?
Nine, but that's okay.
Nine. Okay. I was just, okay. I'm just doing, did I not do 31 days in March? I'm trying to.
30 days.
Thank you, teacher, for correcting me on my calendar and math. I could have used you as a teacher, let's just say, but she was taken hostage. We'll get into whatever details she wants to get in about that. But what happened was she was rescued. The first POW rescued since World War II and the first ever woman rescued. Incredible, incredible story. It all comes back to me. The news footage, there was some false reporting, which I think we'll get into so we can tell the real truth about it. But Jessica, first and foremost, thank you so much for coming on the show. It really is. I mean, honestly, an honor for us both to have you here. Mm-hmm. Second, real quick, I want to thank Sandra, mutual friend of ours, for arranging this and hooking it up. And third, somebody you know, Christopher Martini, says hi. So I just want to make sure I get that in there. So,
that was the one we were telling you about.
Yes. He goes, oh my gosh, tell her I said hi. And
He was talking about he was meeting with you to discuss doing something for you. And we're like, we'll talk to her about it.
We'll tell her on Thursday, you know, to get moving on that. So anyways, thank you again for coming on. It is truly an honor and a privilege to have you here. Can we start before any of the career, what you dreamed of doing, where you came from, your background, how you got into service, and then we can just kind of move on from there.
Yeah, absolutely. So I am from West Virginia. I'm born and raised here. I came back here after the service so that way I could be with my family. But I have a brother who is a year older than I am. And then my sister's about a year and a half younger. So that'll be important details later too. Yep. So for me, I kind of grew up where... We weren't the richest, I should say that. I mean, so, but my family always had everything that we needed. I mean, that's kind of how West Virginia life is. I mean, we just took care of each other and then, you know, we made do, but, obviously didn't have all of this technology that we have nowadays. So for us, it was going outside and playing in the woods and just finding whatever fun that you could create. Mm-hmm. And some of our favorites and kind of what we have passed down to our kids is making like mud pies and, you know, just things that you just found to entertain yourself, whether it was, again, just walking through the woods and finding, you know, the fun. But for me, it was playing sports. Yeah. I loved, absolutely enjoyed that. That's kind of where, I don't know. I mean, I tried everything. I was at one point playing Little League baseball because that's what my brother did. So I was like, if he's doing it, I'm going to do it
that's
too.
That's awesome.
And joined the team with him. And then, yep. You know, even tried like the cheerleading and volleyball and mm-hmm. but basketball. Basketball was my favorite.
It was?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
I loved basketball and I was pretty good at it, I should say. Yeah. I mean, not to brag or anything, but I was mm-hmm. pretty yeah. good 3-point shooter. I was
a
pretty good yeah. guard. I just don't put me under the basket because then I was pointless down there.
Yeah, I mean, it's what the centers and forwards are for.
I'm 5'7". I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, Jim's 5'7". Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's not getting under the hoop.
Yeah, the 5'3" people do not belong under the basket. Yeah. But I then, you know, even played softball, which mm-hmm. I did all 4 years throughout my high school career. And, you know, again, it was just finding anything that you could do. But for me, my dream. So whenever anyone would ask me, hey, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I would always tell them a kindergarten teacher because, sorry about that. I just realized my, so I was like, I want to be a kindergarten teacher. It's something that I've always dreamed of. So I remember the very first day of kindergarten mm-hmm. and walking in. And again, my family, we didn't, other than my aunts or uncles, we never like went to babysitters or anything like yeah. that. So it yeah. was, you played with your family. And again, mm-hmm. we are very out in the rural. So it wasn't like we had the suburbs of community where sure. you go out and play with your friends. It was back in the woods.
Up in the hollers.
Wait, usually when I say hollers, people are like, what? And I'm like,
what are you yelling for? Like, what does that mean?
You live yeah. up a holler.
It's a holler.
It's a holler.
Cricks and hollers. That's what you
exactly.
did.
But I remember that first day of kindergarten and walking in there and I'm like, I don't know any of these kids. And of course they didn't know me. Like mm-hmm. you, and you just get kind of scared and like,
yeah.
in that shyness mm-hmm. point. And I'm sure every kid goes through this, but mm-hmm. you know, I remember it personally. So I yeah. was like, but I remember my kindergarten teacher and her name was Mrs. Linda Davies. And she pulled me to the side and she was like trying to introduce me to other kids. And here, why don't you play with this? And, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah.
And I just remember that and it really stuck with me. Amazing. And I was like, that's the kind of person that I want to be when I grow up.
Yep.
And it did. It stuck with me all the way through yeah, school. Awesome. So when I got to my senior year and you're sitting there and you're filling out the FAFSAs and you're like trying to decide where you want to go and what you want to do with your life. And it was like a no-brainer for me. I was like, sign me up for the elementary education program. We had a really good school here. And I was like, that's the one that I want to go to. Great. This is what I want to do. And again, I stuck with it and all the way through school, this was it. This is exactly what I was going to do until my senior year. And, you know, I had been accepted into, was at Glenville State, community college. And I was like, you know, that's where I want to go. And we always tell people, hey, that's where Channing Tatum went.
Yeah, I know.
Well, there you go.
Right. Which I didn't know that then, or I probably would have been like, screw the Army. Like, I'm going that direction. But
yeah.
but yeah, we, I had everything and my parents, you know, were all set. Like, this is kind of what we were doing. My brother, again, who was a year older than I am, was already into college. Mm-hmm. And, but that summer of 2001, we were all home and we were sitting around our, dining room table. And, I don't even remember, we were playing cards or something, mm-hmm. but we heard a car pull up into our driveway and we were like, uh-oh, like you're going to be in trouble because you invited someone over and mom's not here. Yeah. So we were like, who did it? Which one of the kids would be in trouble? And so he got out of his car and we were watching him come up to the house and we were like, uh-oh, like he looks very dapper. And he was, you know, just had that posture about him. We were like, That's an army recruiter. We invited him in and sat there and talked to him about kind of everything. And, you know, they give the whole spiel of, you know, the career opportunities, the educational benefits, the travel opportunities, meeting friends, you know, so, and everything that he was saying, we were like, wow, that sounds like a fun, like, and my brother and I had never thought about joining, and my grandpa, he served, but, other than that, I mean, we had a couple uncles that, that served, but that was it. And we were like, again, for me, it was education. Sure. I wanted to be in that elementary educational field, I should say. And and the more he talked, and then after he left, my brother and I sat there and we were like, you know what? This could really kind of take that financial burden off of our family. And not that my family or my parents couldn't have put us through college. And my brother and I would have, you know, we would have worked. We would have done the exact same thing that, you know, millions of college students are out there doing to put themselves through college. But I don't know. We just thought about it and we were like, it's, you know, again, with my brother, being a freshman in college, and then I had just graduated high school, and then my sister, who was finishing up her sophomore year, we were like, we were all so close together that, you know, we just wanted to do whatever we could to help our family out.
You said 2001. What?
Yeah.
What time of the 2001?
So that would have been, I think, around probably June when we met with him.
Okay, so prior to,
because
I think you know where I was getting at.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yes, it was before 9/11. I mean, everything was still in peacetime. It was, you know, not even thought about of.
It was like, you know, 4 years of the army and my college is paid for and all that. Exactly. It just makes perfect sense.
Which is what most people, that's where they go.
Yeah, exactly. So, my brother we actually ended up going and signing up together, and we became the first brother sister to sign up on the same day.
Wow, that's cool.
In here that's in West Virginia at that med center. And we did that in July of 2001, and then my brother ended up leaving in August for basic training, and I left the week after 9/11 had occurred. So, mine was September, I think it was 18th, 19th.
Holy smokes.
So, I mean, at that point, I was scared. I mean, I think we all were, because everything was still fresh, and I was like, I don't know how this works. Like, are they just going to take you and send you straight over? Like, do you do? Yeah,
correct.
So, I mean, I was scared. And then when they took me and put me on a little puddle jumper aircraft here from West Virginia, I was like, oh gosh, I've never even been on an airplane before.
Yeah.
I had never kind of really left home. I mean, we had traveled a little bit, but you know, as far as like leaving by myself, that was the first time. And I think just everything with 9/11 kind of really amped up that scare factor within everybody.
Correct.
But I remember them taking me out, and I obviously I was with other people, but I remember a sergeant that was flying out with us. He was walking in the backpack that I had, the strap broke, flipped me in the eye, knocked out my contacts. And I remember him saying, oh, don't worry. Like, once you get to basic training, they'll replace your eyewear. And being an 18-year-old, kind of, I don't want to say prissy, but I was, you know, a girly girl.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, yay, I get another pair of contacts. Like, I'll get, you know where I'm going with that one.
I know where you're going with that one.
We can only imagine.
Yeah, I ended up getting the big, like, chocolate donut glasses that covered my entire face, and good old BCGs.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
But yeah, so that's kind of how everything happened. you know, and my brother and I were very excited to join, especially together, because again, we were very competitive with one another. So it was one of those things, well, if he's going to do it, I'm going to do it. And he was already through basic. And so, yeah, it was fun to be able to have that kind of
combative.
Yeah. So how soon after basic training, you went through all the basic training and then you're stationed, I'm assuming.
Yes.
How long after that did you then get deployed?
Yeah. So I actually got to Fort Bliss. So I went through the advanced individual training, which is how I learned to become a supply clerk. Mm-hmm. So after that, I actually got to El Paso, Fort Bliss, and it was around February of 2002.
Okay.
So
okay.
From February 2002, I was stationed there. Everything was good. Like, you're learning and you're just kind of bouncing ideas off of each other, and you're getting to know, you know, who you are of being out on your own.
Sure.
So, I mean, it was great. And of course, you're then meeting all of these different battle buddies and your friends and roommates. And but we left for Kuwait in February of 2003. So
you did.
Okay. Technically only had about a year of service, actual active service. Okay. Yeah, under my belt.
Going back to when you made the decision to go in the Army, then we'll move from the February 2003 date. What did your parents think? I mean, you were all set for college, right? So did they have, it sounds like a very supporting, loving family. So I can't imagine they weren't, but it had to be some sort of like, whoa, what happened while we were gone? You know, some guy comes, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. Obviously they were nervous for us.
Sure.
I have a very supportive family. So that's the good news.
Yes.
Not everybody has that. Correct. They don't always have the support system. And thankfully, my brother and I had that where our parents were more than willing to be like, okay, try this, see how it goes.
Yeah. Yeah.
If it fails, then you come back home and then, you know, you
I mean, at the time the decision was made. Yeah, it was. It was peacetime. It was nothing, you know, and it's like, you know, it's a great career choice for a lot of people.
Yes.
You know, absolutely. And so it made sense. But so you got over there in February of 2003.
Correct.
You weren't there very long before the attack happened. If you can you remember the day? Do you remember? I mean, I know you got knocked out. I want to make sure we get the story correct, and I want you to tell it. Yeah.
No. Yeah. I obviously there's parts that I don't remember and had to be filled in. Right. And crazy enough that even 21 years later, I'm still finding out information that people are coming forward and be like, did you know? And I'm like, no. Wow. And of course,
my gosh, what a shock.
You know, like we were talking about, there was so many kind of fabricated stories, which we'll get into all of that as well. I mean, it's crazy that even now I'm still learning.
Still learning.
Like, I'm finding out that this or that, and whoa, wait a minute, that actually didn't happen. That was part of, and I'm like, oh my God, like it's crazy to me. But was so we got there in February and then we stayed until President Bush officially declared war, which happened on March 20th.
Yep.
So once March 20th happened, our orders were to just pack up everything we had, obviously, and cross the border. But for us, it was crossing the border with an entire convoy, like a huge, massive convoy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And again, we were just told, follow. Follow the person in front of you. And then once we kind of all got to Baghdad, and then we would separate and go off into where we would be then.
Sure.
It was crazy because even for me being a private, I didn't have a lot of the information. organization. Like they mm-hmm. kept that, you know, the higher ups and,
absolutely.
And your chain mm-hmm. of command. It was like, you know, again, I'm a 19-year-old PFC.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have all of that intel information. It was follow the person in front of you. Of course, I had my supply sergeant with me. But once we got to, we crossed the berm, we got over there. And again, you know, at initially, and I'm sure you've heard the stories if you've been been interviewing people, but we were all dressed in our MOP gear because we didn't know what to expect once we crossed that berm.
Wow.
Because we were one of the very first ones into mm-hmm. the country.
Mm-hmm.
So it was correct. The day President Bush declared, we all pushed forward.
Mm-hmm.
So we were wearing our MOP gear, and of course you're sweating like crazy and you're like, I can't see. And my gas mask is like irritating because that thing is just, But of course, I mean, they wanted us safe, didn't know what we were going to expect once we crossed over because, you know, Kuwait was our safe haven. We were initially safe as long as we were on that side.
Mm-hmm.
So once we crossed, I mean, and then after a while, obviously, they let us kind of take off the gear and, and we just kept pushing forward. But, you know, I remember there was a couple of days where the sand was so thick that you couldn't see because those sandstorms over there are just ridiculous. You can't see anything. So it was kind of like pump your brakes so that you could still see the person in front of you. So initially, we were just following tailgate. But yeah, I mean, it was crazy. But by March 22nd, and that's only 2 days being in the country, that my unit started to kind of fall behind the rest of everybody else. And then my commander and first sergeant kind of made the decision, let's split everybody and send the vehicles that can keep up, push them forward with the rest of the convoy. And then the back third of our unit, we're going to stay behind. Well, what happened was, is that the 33 of us and those 17 vehicles got left behind. Like we fell so far behind. I think there was a report that said we were 19 hours behind the rest of that convoy. I mean, if you think about that, like you could almost be from the East Coast, almost, you can make it pretty far, like in 19 hours. So we were that far behind the rest of that convoy. So, I mean, we were fatigued, we were tired because it was just go, 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 go. You know, let's try to catch up. Let's get to where we need to be. But I remember there was, let me see, 4 females within the 33 of us that, and I remember at one point we were like, guys, we have to stop. You gotta let us females out so we can, you know, use the restroom.
It's
easy for the guys, but for us women, we were like, come on, you guys got us. But we found this one bush out in the middle of the desert, and they were like, all right, go. So we all ran down there to find that one bush. I mean, it was just little things like that that you don't think about, but you're in the middle of the desert and you've got nowhere to go to even use the restroom. Like, but yeah, I mean, we were tired. We were definitely fatigued. And that did not help anything. I mean, most of us hadn't even ate. I mean, it was just go, go, go. Let's try to catch up with the rest of that convoy, the rest of our unit. But yeah, eventually, because of us being so far behind, we lost GPS communication, the radio communication, like all of that failed us because we were so far from the rest of our, you know, communication center. Like it was rough. But my commander and first sergeant did have paper maps. So we kind of followed that. And eventually we made it to Hardtop. We were finally off of, out of the sand. And so they were looking at the maps and, you know, kind of determining where do we need to go. And unfortunately, they read the map wrong and we ended up into the city of Nazaria.
Wow.
Okay.
And that's where it happened.
Yes. And that was 3 days of,
3 days
of being into Iraq. So yeah, we left March 20th, March 23rd. We ended up.
So was it an attack from them or was it like an IED? Was it what?
No. So, we actually stopped. So once we crossed the Euphrates River Bridge and got into the city, we stopped, kind of regrouped, figured out, you know, where the heck are we? Because now things aren't making sense. Nothing looks right. But yeah, we kind of pulled off to the side of the road. But I remember this little tiny white pickup. And I don't know, like an S10 to kind of give you an idea.
Sure.
I don't know what it was, but like a little tiny S10. And basically the guy inside of there was collecting data. You know, how many did he see? What kind of, you know, vehicles? What kind of weapons did he see us with? So I think what he was doing was kind of relaying that information back to the center of town. But for us, instead of just turning around at that point, they made the decision, let's keep going, see what happens. And unfortunately, we made it about halfway into town. And then the decision again was turn around, let's get back out of here. But it was early in the morning, very little activity at that point.
Yeah.
Until, again, we're in the middle of town. Things are a little louder now. You know, we've got all of these vehicles coming in that we are not supposed to be in that part of town.
Yep.
And, they made the decision again. All right, nope, this isn't where we are supposed to be. Let's turn around. Let's get back out of here. But by that point, you know, again, we were causing ruckus. We were making noise at 6 a.m. So everyone was coming outside of their homes to see what was happening, what was going on. And it was by that point, I mean, again, there was Iraqis just surrounding us from every direction, anywhere you could look. I mean, there was either vehicles or an Iraqi standing there waiting to attack us. And we knew at that point it was locked, load, get ready.
Yeah.
The worst is about to happen to us.
And it did. And it did.
It did, yeah. Yeah, I mean, at first it was just kind of waiting. But once we heard that, I don't know, that first dreaded gunshot. And then it was followed up by literally everything. I mean, anything that you could think of, especially the RPGs, the rocket-propelled grenades, those were just bombing us. So
wow, the fact that you survived it for one, I don't maybe you can tell us how many lives were actually lost on that day in your combat?
Inside of my vehicle, so my 5-ton that I was driving the transfer case busted on it. So I actually, at the point of the ambush, I was inside the Humvee that was driven by my best friend and the first sergeant in the passenger seat. So since my vehicle was being pulled by a tow truck, well, the tow truck actually weren't the two that were inside of there weren't even from our unit. So yeah, somehow they got attached to us. So they ran out of the gas. So they ended up inside of the Humvee with us as well.
Okay.
So at this point there's five of us in a 4-person Humvee. I mean, so since I was the smallest at the time, I took kind of the middle. So I was like almost sitting up on the transmission, like, yeah. So just to kind of make room for everyone. I mean, mm-hmm. you got to do what you got to do at that sure. point. Again, my best friend, Lori Paestoa, was driving. My first sergeant was in the passenger seat, and then the two soldiers were beside me. And we just gunned it and just tried to avoid whatever we could until we were hit by an RPG on the right side of our vehicle.
Gotcha.
It caused Lori to lose control, and we ended up slamming into the back of a disabled 18-wheeler. So the driver of the 18-wheeler was shot and killed. And then the passenger was able to kind of get out and escape. And she was later also held as a prisoner of war. But inside of our vehicle, when we hit the back of the semi, Lori ended up having head trauma and ended up later dying of, you know, yep. a horrible, horrible death. But
sorry about that.
Yeah. And then the three men were all shot and killed. So for me, I was the only survivor. But we are unsure, because I don't remember any of that. So we're unsure exactly what caused me to black out.
Mm-hmm.
Again, there was reports of that I was shot, and, you know, there's a hole there, but again, we don't know what, we don't know how, we don't, you know, we do have no information, since I was unconscious and, no one else survived. So we have no, I mean, there's still a lot of missing information.
And
as much as I have tried, like, just to try to find out anything that I can, mm-hmm. again, I'm slowly getting more information, and it's been 21 years, but I've kind of accepted it. I'm like, you know what? It is what it is at this point. Mm-hmm. I survived for a reason, and you know, let's make the best of mm-hmm. what I can at this point.
Yeah. So when you were knocked out, were you like the entire time you were prisoner of war, were you in and out, or were you kind of coming out of it after a while?
No, so actually I was knocked unconscious. They're guesstimating about 3 hours.
Oh.
Again, it's kind of hard to really pinpoint. When I woke up versus, mm-hmm. I mean, they know about the timeline of the accident because of the other survivors.
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. As far as me waking up, we don't really have any information on that. But again, because I was the only American taken hostage. I should back up. So I was the only American taken hostage to the hospital. There were 5 other mm-hmm. POWs from my unit as well. Mm-hmm. So they actually, when they came around to determine who was alive and who was KIA,
mm-hmm.
they found that even though I was unconscious, that I was still breathing. So they actually ripped my body from the vehicle, mm-hmm. dragged me across the pavement to one of Saddam's palaces. And they know that because that's where all of my uniform was found.
Wow.
Because once they took me over there, you know, they stripped me of my gear, and then that's how they proceeded to break my bones. So they actually snapped my right humerus. My back was broken at the 4th and 5th lumbar. We're not exactly sure how that one happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then my left femur was broken, as well as my left tibia. But that one, they actually took like a metal pipe and, broke my bones and my lower leg with that metal pipe. And
all while you were unconscious? at that?
Yeah. So thankfully, okay. I was still unconscious at that point. So, and that was one of the things that, you know, really didn't make sense to anyone is why did they proceed to do that when I wasn't awake to feel it, other than just them wanting to harm somebody.
Correct.
And that's probably one of the things that I'll never know and probably never care to know.
Correct. I mean,
yeah, that's one of those that maybe you don't want to. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are certain things like, you know, but I know that they took Lori's body as well, even though she was already gone. They took her with me. And the only thing that we know at this point is that we were the only two females. So we don't know why that they took the two of us. Again, I mean, I don't have to say it. I mean, you can imagine what they did to us females, but,
need to,
No, I usually don't kind of go into that, but I mean,
we don't, there's no need to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then they took us to the hospital. So they took Lori and I both.
Which is insane to me. It's weird. Is that?
Yeah.
Do you find that like kind of just like odd? Like why would they?
No,
speculation. I know I'm asking, I guess, rhetorically. I didn't mean for, but it's.
No. I mean, honestly, we have no idea. I mean, that's one of the things that we'll probably never know. Other than the fact that, you know, they did harm to us. So then they were trying to treat us. I have no
whether
answer.
Whether it was the people who did harm or somebody. Somebody with a soul or a conscious or a heart that took you there, right? It could be one.
We don't need to, we don't need to go into what happened during the time you were there. Yeah. But so if we can, I mean, if you want to, but what I'd like to know is what unit came in to get you and rescued you? Because that right there is awesome.
Do you remember that?
From what I understand, American soldiers are family and they went to get their family. And so.
Yeah. And at that time, I mean, they still say it, no soldier left behind. Like they don't leave anyone behind. So they make sure to go in and get everyone that they can.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, I definitely remember a lot about the captivity, especially after the point that they took me down to the operating room. And I was with about three Iraqis, one who could speak broken English. The other two I couldn't understand. But I remember this one and he told me that they needed to amputate my leg. But so after that kind of instance that I didn't want to fall asleep. So I was pretty alert from then on just trying to be aware of my surroundings, what was happening, the noises. But for the most part, I mean, because of them moving me around, because I mean, at one point they even took me out to an abandoned building and put me in there and then left me. Jeez. So just listening and kind of becoming aware of your surroundings, like all of that really kind of kicked in. But there wasn't nothing that I could do because again, they put me in this abandoned building and just left. And I couldn't hear anyone. Like there was no movement, no vehicles even outside that I could hear. I mean, it was
solitary.
It was the oddest, eeriest feeling of just silence. Just complete and eerie silence. Like I was even hoping for, you know, I don't know, hearing a donkey or
something,
playing,
a rainstorm, something, anything,
something, anything. But I mean, it was just silence. But they did end up coming back. They got me, took me back to the hospital, and at that point is when I heard, you know, someone outside of the hospital hallways, and I could hear my name being called of, you know, where is Private Lynch? And they were looking for me. And I, and again, I, I was scared because I didn't know, I didn't know who this was. I mean, is this an Iraqi that could speak English? Was this the Americans? You know, just all kinds of things go through your head when you're in that kind of situation of what do I do? How, I mean, I couldn't do anything. I couldn't run. I couldn't get up. I couldn't, you know, I was at their basic, their mercy of like, all right, well, it is what it is. And I knew with my name being called that I was the target. And that's kind of what made it scarier. And, you know, being completely alone and not having other Americans to kind of rely on or to look at to be like, you know, what should we do in this case? But yeah, I was locked in kind of this little tiny hospital room. And I remember the two Iraqis that were with me at that time and just becoming very fidgety, antsy, you know, the whole nine yards. And but yeah, they were let out of the room. And before I knew it, I was just completely surrounded, you know, by PJs and, you know, your SEALs were standing there. And I mean, it just became just chaos of everybody, you know, wanting me to look this way and how are you feeling and what hurts? And I'm like, I don't
know. I'm like, oh my God. Like,
so there were SEALs that came in.
Yes, yes. There yeah, there was some SEALs standing there.
You don't want to mess with them.
Marines. You name it, and they were all right there, a part of it. And if they weren't inside of the room, then they were pulling security detail outside of the hospital or doing kind of back behind of the diversion tactics of, you know, shooting missiles and creating that behind the scenes of, all right, get your attention drawn over here while they were taking
And your reaction had to have been, oh my God. You know,
because I imagine and confused
prayed,
and
you prayed a lot, I would imagine, during this time. And
oh, absolutely.
Jeez, this is incredible.
Mesmerized
to see less than 1% of the population be able to come out of this. I mean, honestly, less than 1% of the population, and maybe even less than that. And for you to be able to, and again, we'll talk about how long, you know, I'm sure you went through help and stuff like that and everything, but you're just an amazing person. And, and to forgoing what you went through, it kind of makes, you know, when Dale and I get a little bit upset about our day, I think from now on, we probably think, well, you know what, you know,
I sprained my ankle, you know,
yeah, a month ago. Your story, I mean,
literally, what is happening?
So, you know, when they came to get you, and because I want to make sure we cover as much as we can, when they came and got you out, and I would imagine your family was just, oh, thank God. And I'm getting choked up here. I'm sorry. But,
it's amazing.
So, when you came back to the States, how long, physically, did it take you to, because I mentally there's probably still issues, but I would think not issues. I'm sorry, but you probably still have some mental.
No,
but
there.
physically, how long did it take you to mend and are you fully mend?
So no, I am actually still going through surgeries. I just had my 8th operation on my right foot. This past November. So I'm still back in physical therapy. And you know, honestly, I've been in physical therapy for the past 21 years. Like it's been an ongoing process because once we fix this, then something else occurs. Or, you know, so it's kind of like that song, what is it? The hip bones connected to the knee. So, I mean, once you get something, you know, hurting or fixed, and then there's another issue. And then, so it's been constant. But so basically once they got me to Germany, that's when I was able to meet up with my family. So and that was like around April, I don't even know, 5th or something like that of 2003. So I don't remember too much at all of them being there with me at all. Yeah. Like, I ain't even gonna lie. Like, I was kept pretty sedated for most of the time, because that is where they put the cage in my back. Because again, my fourth and fifth lumbar was broke. They were able to put a rod in my right arm. And then my left femur. So that is the one that the Iraqis were actually going to go amputate my leg. So when I was still in the unconscious state, they actually went in, surgically removed my femur bone. So we have absolutely no idea what happened to that. We don't know if it
was,
you know, crushed. We don't know if it was, you know, we have absolutely no idea what happened to the left femur, other than so the Iraqis removed mine. They put in a 1940s era rod that was unsterilized and was fit for a man. So it was too long. Again, I'm only 5'3". Yeah. So they put this unsterilized rod in my leg. And of course, it caused an infection. Once I got to Germany, they were able to go in. They were able to remove the that infected femur unsterilized and or rod, and then put in a new clean one. And then they were able to take out the left bone or tibia and replace that with a rod. And then my right foot was completely crushed, because during the ambush, when we hit the back of that semi, my body flew forward since I was not in a seat. Yeah. My foot got lodged underneath of the passenger seat. And then when the Iraqis came to get me out of the vehicle, they just jerked my foot and caused it to completely like turn backwards. So that's why I'm still dealing with the surgeries on the right foot. And I know people are like, yeah, but it's been 21 years. You should be good now. But
no,
not how it works, especially when I was so broken at that time.
Yeah.
And when I was rescued, I weighed 76 pounds.
Holy smokes.
76 pounds.
So no, there's no food, no art, like nothing.
I didn't receive any food, no water. They did give me like 4 ounces. So if you think like a baby bottle, 4 ounces of orange juice, which to me tastes like our, I don't know if you remember this, like 1990s, we had the Tang.
Tang.
Yeah, Tang. Of course. Yeah. And it was, it was horrible. Well, I mean, I enjoyed it back then because it was cheap and, you know, that's what our family.
I know. We all had it. We all had it growing up. All of us.
Yeah. I will not drink it anymore, though, because I'm like, oh my gosh, that just reminds me so much of what they would ate. Either,
I can imagine.
Wow.
So I was very frail, very, I don't know, just, I don't want to say hurt, but I was hurting all over, mentally, physically, the whole nine yards of it all. And then when they got me to Walter Reed, that's kind of when, you know, they brought in the mental, they were trying to do physical therapy, the occupational therapy, just trying to get me to kind of get back to life. And I don't know if you remember, but in 2003 at Walter Reed Army Hospital, they were bringing in even like celebrities and, you know, just anyone that they could. I remember Hulk Hogan was there. Yeah. I didn't get to meet him, but Hulk Hogan, like they were just bringing in anyone, athletes, anyone that they could to kind of, you know, bump the morale of our injured soldiers. And so that's one of the things that, you know, also sticks with you is, wow, you know, as bad as I was hurting, again, at least I had my family, I had my support system, I had all of that. And I looked over and I would see some of these men and have absolutely nobody with them. And at no point, like, no one came to visit them. No one, like, it was just
You just, it the was things sad you don't to think speak. About.
Right? Yeah, yeah, exactly. And you don't think about that. But I think for me, that, again, just looking over and being like, you know what? As bad as I am right now, I know I'm going to get through this. I mm-hmm. know that I'm going to get through this. Because when I had that, I don't know, that resiliency of mm-hmm. like wanting to get over everything.
Sure.
Just to persevere and do whatever I could to make myself, you know,
yeah.
be me again.
Again, and it did, yeah, it absolutely.
Took, yeah, yeah. It took quite a while. I mean, I'm
oh, not sure.
It took quite a while, like just the mental, the physical, all of that just really took a toll.
It's amazing that you are who you are today.
Oh, thank you.
There's a credit. I mean, I wasn't kidding when I said God, less family, percent of 1% of the population yeah. couldn't have survived that.
Could not, absolutely so, not. I, let me, if real, real quick, cause I know you're short on time too. And I,
you're fine.
I could listen. I could say, I sit here all day. Yeah. So,
I mean, this is just
the soldiers that rescued, first of all, do you know how they got their intelligence to know where you were? Have you ever been told that, or has anybody ever informed you?
A little bit. Yeah. Again, so that's some of the stuff that I'm still learning about, but okay. I think, definitely they kind of filled me in of like, all right, here's, and if you, oh, and if you go and watch the rescue video, I don't know if you've ever seen that, mm-hmm. like you can see in the very beginning of them collecting all the data and plotting and mm-hmm. just figuring out on the maps, okay, we've yeah. done this, we've done this, and this mm-hmm. is, and they did have information, I guess, from one of the nurses that was in the hospital. Her husband was a Iraqi lawyer, and apparently okay. he went and also gave them information about, you know,
thank God,
what floor I'm yeah. on. Yeah. So I mean, again, I can't verify any of that because sure. I don't know if he's telling the truth. You know what I mean? Yeah, like, I don't know if he was telling the
truth.
I don't know any of that, but if that's what he did, then mm-hmm. I'm good with it. Like, I'm good yeah, yeah. with
yeah. So I agree. It doesn't, it's just, thank God it happened that way. Now
yeah.
let's, if we can, let's, yeah. let's talk a little bit about the false stories that came out.
Yes.
There was all sorts, right? I mean, there was things that were said and things that weren't true. You fired your mm-hmm. weapon. You were, I mean, which you may have, we don't know any of that. I mean, literally maybe you did. But what false stories did you hear? And, you know, yep. tell us the truth now, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah, absolutely. So, and I've never held back on any of that. So yep. I was very upfront in the very beginning of saying, right. so I didn't get out of the military until July 22nd.
Okay.
So that was my release date. Mm-hmm. I was rescued on April 1st. Mm-hmm. So from April 1st, to July 22nd, you can't speak, you can't talk about, you can't accept yeah. gifts, you can't do anything while you were kind of in that position. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of muted. It was one of those things of, all right, let's focus on, you know, just the rehab of getting mm-hmm. me to where I need to be, and not so much of on the outside world. Like, they even shut me off from reading newspapers or
oh, wow.
magazines yeah. or, you know, looking up the internet, even though that was kind of just a beginning thing.
Yeah. yeah, true.
Not everybody was using it that yeah. as much as what we do today. But yeah, I mean, like, even watching the news and stuff, mm-hmm. I was kind of kept away from that of, you know, focus on your health. But yeah, so once I found out, though, that so they were saying that I was rainbow, you know, mm-hmm. a GI Jane kind of situation.
Yes.
I was doing this and that, and I was gunning down everyone. And I was like, well, that was a little hard since yeah. I was knocked out inside of a Humvee. Like, I was not out doing any of that. Story sounded cool.
A great story.
Not me. Not me.
great movie.
yeah, great movie, but not
yeah.
me.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, we even heard about, I was one of the ones that they had against a building, which again, mm-hmm. wasn't me. I had a broken back. I was not standing up against a building. Yeah. But that report, and they, I don't know that they officially determined it, but they had stated that it was most likely another one from my unit, Sergeant Walters, and they had cornered him as he was trying to escape. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, they, you know, shot and killed him at, at point blank. But I mean, yeah, the stories went on and on, and anything that they could get, and some of it was somewhat true, but they were still fabricated to the point where we were like, whoa, hold up. I mean, you got a little piece of that correct, but then you dove off of the deep end and just ran with whatever that you could create. Mm-hmm. But no, I mean, we did. And even when the other former POWs got released, I mean, we tried to kind of come together and be like, all right, this is what they remember. This is what I remember. Mm-hmm. We really tried to set the record straight with everything that happened that day. And of course, they were able to go in and kind of talk with even some of the Iraqis. And I don't know how that they did that. I have no idea. Like that's that was on them. I have no idea. But yeah, we were just able to kind of go in and whatever I was able to do, I did. I was like, nope, that wasn't me. And I gave credit to, you know, whoever it was that they were talking about in that instance, because I wanted to make sure that the real heroes were being awarded with what they should. I mean, and if they did that, then absolutely. I mean, we had, well, he was a PFC at the time, but, Patrick Miller, he amazing. Like he shot down so many, Iraqis and saved so many in my unit so that they could escape. And unfortunately he was, taken as a prisoner of war as well. But yeah, those other five POWs were later rescued. And thankfully, they all were able to get home as well.
Do you still contact them? Do you still keep
I do. Contact? Actually, I just saw them this past week. So we went out since we, you know, March 23rd was the date. So we all went out to Arizona and visited with them. And, you know, got to be able to spend time with Lori's family as well as the other POWs.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, I mean, I know this is, it's probably a no, but do you talk to any of the people that saved you, any of the soldiers that saved you? Do you know their names? Do you know?
I do. Yeah.
You do?
Right. Oh, good. Oh, well, good. Awesome. That's
yeah,
that's
cool. I do. So I mean, there were a lot of them, unfortunately, that wanted no part of being recognized. But yeah, there was a few, especially in the very beginning, that came forward and said, you know, I don't want any, I don't want anything out of this. I just want to come and make sure and see for myself that you are doing okay. Yep. And I fully respected their decision to not be known. But yeah, it was awesome to see some of them come forward. But there are a few that I still remain in close contact with. Good. And, you know, they even check up on me every now and then and be like, I'm just just following up. Or how are you doing? Yeah,
That's great. That's family. That's true. Yeah, that's true.
I'm getting choked up. This is just
said
this,
the real heroes. But don't.
You're one of them.
Yeah, don't I mean, that's you are a true hero, a true American hero. For not just because, the decision. I mean, I think anybody who's gone into goes into the military is a true hero at any rate, or any first responder, or those folks that do service not for the guts and glory, and certainly not for the money, you know, but to protect the nation or the city or their communities, whatever they do. Yeah. And you certainly are one of them. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. You are now. You got and have been, I guess, a teacher, right? You got that teaching degree.
You were able to do that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is it kindergarten? Are you a kindergarten teacher?
No, so I'm actually a sub, so it kind of helps me with my physical therapy. So, that's my favorite one to go in. So, anytime a sub or a kindergarten position comes available on the sub system, I grab it immediately because I'm like, and it is. It's still one of my favorite jobs. I love being in the classroom. And there's not a lot of our teachers like to take on.
Agreed.
But to me, it's a very rewarding, like I love being in there. I love, you know, because I think for me, it's going back to those days of my kindergarten teacher and being like, I remember the things that she did to me and it was so impactful. So I try to like, if I see a kid sitting alone in the corner, you know, I'm going to go over and I'm going to play with them and you know, see if they're having a hard day. Because again, those very first, you know, first years of your school are they're hard, they're rough. And, and kids are mean nowadays.
Oh, so. I know kids are, you know, cause parents are, you know, so I don't know.
It's I don't know what's worse. That because, you know, there are some great teachers out there and they are okay. And I know they get a lot because we generalize. Right. And so we try not to, I mean, we, you know, we, if there's a teacher that we think is bad and we talk about them on our show and stuff, we're going to talk about
it. We sure do.
But we also have to point out all of us, you and your kindergarten teacher, I had, elementary school teachers, I had middle school teachers and I have high school teachers. I still remember to this day. And, for one reason or another for what they've done. And so as a teacher, you guide kids, you're supposed to guide children to do good. And so you, how long have you been substitute teaching and are you looking for a full-time job or because of your physical fitness that you have to do therapy?
Physical therapy.
What are we looking at here? If you can share that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So yeah, this is, let's see, I got my degree in 2011. So it's been, it's been quite a few years of
from Channing Tatum's college.
I didn't actually end up going there. Okay. I should have, but I did not. I ended up going to West Virginia University.
That's a pretty good university.
So like a little community college.
Yeah, my wife's a Marshall girl. So
I'm not a Marshall fan. I mean, nothing against them. I don't mean in that way. I'm a WVU.
Girl. You're a mountaineer. It's okay.
I'm a mountaineer.
Not but everyone's perfect.
Funny, obviously, our schools are very competitive with one another.
Yeah.
Not so much as like it is with Pitt. When Pitt comes into town,
we all have that in common. We all hate Pitt. So
I hate the city. So it's
not a
anyway.
Hey, I don't disagree with you on that one. I remember getting lost down in Pittsburgh because our GPS has quit working. We were like,
"What?
How do we get out of here?" Because you're just kind of surrounded with buildings of nothing,
and it's all like it's all one way downhill, uphill, terrible. Sorry, those listening.
I love my Pittsburgh fans because I love Pittsburgh Steelers, so we love going over there. But sometimes
Well, see, I'm a Cleveland Browns guy. He's a Cincinnati Bengals guy.
There's it's tough wrong to be Pittsburgh
anything. So you went from 100% perfect to 99.8.
Wow. 2.2. Well,
I feel like, I mean, she's a hero for crying out loud. If she wasn't a hero and, you know, then it'd be lower. But
Jim's rude that way.
We're competitive. We just
are you teach? Oh, here's a question. Are you teaching at the school in your hometown? Are you back in your hometown? Are you teaching in the hometown school system that you went to?
I do. Awesome. But I also do the county over. So I pick up two different counties. And it keeps me busy. So when I'm not out of town doing, you know, motivational speaking events, I can be found either inside of the classroom. Mm-hmm. I mean, at one point, we did the whole movies, which kind of brings us back up to Chris. When Chris had asked me, hey, what do you think about? And I was like, you know, that's crazy because we were just thinking about kind of redoing something. But I told him, I was like, I don't want to like spoil too many because we haven't put all these details out, but we can't say that it won't be, you know, it won't be like a true like bio, like it's not going to be anything like that. So that kind of, you know, we'll leave everything else kind of a mystery of when we get that accomplished. But
and you'll be in that movie?
I will be probably more behind the scenes helping him direct and making sure that.
Because what'd you think of acting? You like it when you and what was the movie? I apologize, I had it and then it.
No. Well, actually, I've done quite a few. So
you
I
have
did
Virtuous
and
Virtuous is the one I was church, thinking.
Yes,
Virtuous, and what else?
One Church with JC Films.
Oh, okay.
And then, also, I picked up another one, Shake Off the World, and he was with a producer out in L.A. Yeah. So, it was fun. They're kind of more faith-based films.
Sure. Yeah.
So, but they can be found on TV. Like you can watch them. They're very good. I mean, both producers were absolutely wonderful.
How do you like acting?
It was fun. I will say that. It was fun. And I'm always up for anything.
Yeah.
I don't know that it was kind of my cup of tea. I would rather be in the classrooms. Like
in the class. Yeah.
Where I feel comfortable.
Chris has promised us a cameo in something.
So. He has.
and we're gonna hold him to that.
Yeah,
tell him you want to be in the Jessica Lynch film.
I'll tell him. Yeah,
we do.
I don't know what role yet, but you know, I don't know if leading man is taken yet or. But if not,
Dale can be my father.
There you go. Exactly.
Jessica, this is why. Yeah, this is why it will be a one guy one coup. We'll be doing this podcast here shortly.
Surprised I haven't been fired yet. So has Hollywood themselves? Have they approached you at all?
Oh,
has anyone approached you about?
Yeah,
because your story is phenomenal. And
oh my god, it's one of a kind. Honestly, it's one of a kind. So.
Yeah, I mean, we have been, and we've even talked to a few, but I don't know. I mean, the ones that kind of reached out, we didn't really see eye to eye with their vision of how they wanted to take the film. And I think that's one of the main things is you got to be able to believe in it. And, you know, again, it was just not how I would see it.
Chris is the guy.
Chris is amazing.
Chris is the guy.
I've known him for a few years now, so I truly trust him. I know that he's going to do an absolutely wonderful job.
Absolutely.
He's going to have his hands full because I am a very busy person.
Yeah.
is why I told him I was like, I don't want to be in it because, you know, I bounce from, you know, everything. I've got my hands a little bit of everything. I'm getting ready to kind of take on a different role with the VA. So
tell us what you're doing. Yeah. Tell us what's coming up for you. Then. That's what I want.
And if there's if there's anything you're involved in that we need to know about for donations and stuff like that.
No, absolutely. So no, this one, I guess I should say the newest job because I try to help out wherever I'm, you know, I can. I don't want to take on too many roles that then I lose myself in it, but also I also want to be able to help out wherever I can. And again, if it's the VA of getting, you know, veterans, their benefits that they are entitled to. And, you know, it's all a learning process, but, I can't officially, like, they're waiting to officially announce it. So
yeah.
Once that happens, then I'll let you guys know. But
yeah, please.
Should be here within the next week or two of
this. Oh, wow. Excellent.
The official announcement of me kind of taking over this huge VA role.
That's great. Congratulations. Yeah.
Give our veterans the respect they deserve, and give a little bit of the money we're giving to these illegals to our veterans.
Maybe. You think?
Maybe
all of it, you know? But yeah.
We can only hope with that. I mean, we can only hope.
Well, we're going to have to change the...
It's what we do.
I'm going to call it the regime. We're going to have to change the regime first.
No, absolutely. I mean, and we have so many struggling, even civilians, not even, you know, veterans.
Oh, you're right.
Correct.
So many. And, you know, whether it has anything to do with politics, I mean, I don't get into all of that.
Right.
But I mean, look That's around you. Neighbors are struggling. Veterans are struggling. Your kids are struggling. Like, it's all there. So it's, and again, you know, I'm only one person, but I feel that if I can help that one person, then
that's what all the things are.
If I was offered 10 people or Jessica, I'm taking Jessica.
Yeah. So I'm taking one of you over. One of you over 100 gents is what I'm telling you.
We say this all the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But we have met so many people. They're great, awesome people on this show. Mm-hmm. And you're one of those that probably is, you just make us better. Because we were able to talk to you and we hear your story and you know, we got to meet you and it's, and I'm not just saying that we really feel this way. Cause after we're done, he and I are going to talk and I guarantee you it comes up. Oh, what an awesome person. I mean,
just awesome spirit.
And again, I know for you to be able to come out the way you have, and I just, that's an American soldier right there. And, time, you know, I've skipped a generation. My father was in the 101st Airborne, and my son serves as a police officer. Mm-hmm. I didn't get the calling. I didn't get it, but I have always respected and I love the people that do. And so anything we can do, like, is there a charity you're involved with right now that we can help, or is that what the Veterans Affairs you were referring to?
So no, that will actually be kind of an actual job. Okay. Like
job, I'll
be taking over it. That's, job. Yeah. Yeah. Like it's an actual job. But yeah, I mean, again, I've kind of do a little bit of everything, but, I mean, I can shoot you a few that are great.
And you do, and like you said, you do motivational speaking too, right? So,
yeah. So I'm still doing the motivational speaking. Okay. So that's kind of one of the nice things about this new VA position, it'll still allow me to be in the classrooms. I can still kind of, you know, go out and do my speeches and you know, give those talks of resiliency and perseverance and faith and So I enjoy that. I love inspiring others and just
Well, if you don't,
and you've inspired me.
If you can't inspire people, that's their issue, not yours. And
that's true. You certainly inspired me. And
the first time I think Dale and I got choked.
Jim,
up
can you hear me?
Yeah.
Can you hear me, Jim?
Oh, shut up! You interrupt me all the time.
I mean, can you hear me? Well, sometimes he can. Jessica, this is not unusual for a podcast.
We have a guest. All right.
I understand. I want to respect your time and I want to respect the fact that you were gracious enough to come on our show.
Yes.
Jim said it. You make us better people.
Thank you.
I honestly feel better knowing you. And I knew I was looking forward to this conversation. I really did. I knew it was, I mean, I kept seeing it on the calendar and then it got moved and I'm just like, no, I just need to, for some reason, I don't know what it is. I'm like, I need to speak to her. Mm-hmm. We need to speak to her. And so I'm honored again, honestly. And I mean that seriously honored. We thank you for your service, for all you did, you continue to do, anything we can do, to help in any way, shape or form, please let us know. Mm-hmm. And please come back When you get time, I know you're super busy. So that's again, another privilege for us to have this time with you. But wait, if you get time, please, you know, come back. When you get that new position, love to hear about it.
Yeah.
Shoot us an email or come back on. We can talk about it then finally.
Yeah. Or even when I'll bring Chris on and we'll be able to talk.
That's what I'm saying. If we can get both of you on and kind of talk about, I would love to. Yeah, I absolutely would love to. So,
and then we'll, Jim, you know,
Jim, anything to say before I let Jessica have the last word?
Yeah, no, we're fine. Apparently, I'm talking too much, Jessica.
Jessica, anything to add before we go?
I think the biggest thing is let's not forget that we do have, you know, veterans and even active duty stationed everywhere that still need our support. And yes, I'm throwing in veterans in there because even once they leave, they still need that support. It's not one, you know, once you're out of the service, we supported you then. Now you're kind of out on your own. No, like they still need that, that support, that prayers, the love that we gave to them while they were either deployed or, you know, over here serving. So no matter what it is, I mean, I think that's one of the things that we kind of forget that if it's not during wartime and it's not being broadcasted on TV every 2 seconds, that we forget that we still have, you know, military men and women who are stationed throughout the world who are still protecting us, who are still serving for us.
And correct.
So, I mean, I think that would be the one thing is just never forget that we have those men and women that are brave enough to still be out there given this crazy world that we live in.
Allowing us to do what we do today, right? Yeah. Allowing us our freedoms and all that. Yeah. Jessica, thank you so much. Again, a privilege and an honor. Thank you for your service. Thank God you are who you are. Stay that way. Because the world's better for having you in it. So we'll talk soon.
Thank you. Appreciate
it. Thank you. All right. Bye-bye. Jessica, honestly, was that to you? That was we say this, right? I'm stumbling because again, I'm not really trying to offend anybody or any past guest or anything like that. But to me, this was the war hero I needed to talk to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? This is the person that deserves our praise and our love and our attention and everything she gets in life. What she went through, Jim, you and I couldn't do it. You said it in the interview, 99.9% of the people couldn't do it. And here's this 5'3" little girl from West Virginia surviving horrific injuries. Horrific. Some she talked about, some she absolutely was not going to, and rightfully so. I said it there. It's a better world with her in it. And that's the honest to God's truth. That interview impacted me more than anybody I've ever talked to in my life.
Right.
You know,
the more famous prisoner of war that we've heard about was Mark Littrell. You and I talked about that, right? Sole survivor or
lone survivor,
excuse me. Mm-hmm. But this is different. He was protected by people. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it was a little different than what she was. She was not protected by anybody with what she went through, and especially as a woman.
As a woman.
And I'm like you said, you and I both, there was times we had to collect ourselves just like, because like, it's,
wait a second.
You could just hear it. I mean, when she's talking about it, you can just hear it and you can see it. And when you see it, it's like,
it's folks. If it's the one show you've ever listened to in your life, I hope it's this one. Make it this one.
And share it.
If it's the one you share. We say it a lot. And I don't really give a crap about us. If you care, and here's another point, Jim, because you made it after the interview, after Jessica left, you and I talked because we had to. We just had to talk. You made the point about if you hear that and you hear her story and you hear her talk about all she went through and you still are okay with illegals coming over and getting benefits and taking beds up at the VA and doctors – from the VA. If that's something that's still okay with you, without being brutally honest, get the fuck out of our country.
Plain and simple.
And I'm sorry about that language.
No.
Get the plain fuck out of our country.
Simple.
Plain and simple. Plain and simple.
Guys, when we talk about veterans and we talk about the homeless veterans and stuff, we're not talking about homeless veterans that just have mental issues. We have homeless veterans that have mental issues with missing limbs and wheelchairs. Mm-hmm. And these are soldiers that were harmed protecting us, protecting us, including the politicians of this country.
Including those that don't agree with them.
And they let them just come across the border and give them money and a place to live.
And food and shelter. Yeah, food, shelter, money. Everything our veterans are not getting.
And as the interview stated, Jessica is going to be a part of something for the VA.
We're
looking forward to that. She couldn't tell us even after off the air. So we're looking forward to that. But she has said that she'll come back on and talk about it. Because, folks, Wounded Warrior, Tunnel to Towers, Warrior Shield.
Yep. Sub-Zero Mission.
Wheelchairs for warriors. They go to the veterans. They go to our and first responders. Not just veterans. It's also first responders.
Correct.
So these are the causes. You know, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm a Republican. But if you donate to a candidate, don't. Whatever money you're giving to a candidate, give to one of these charities.
You don't need to donate to a candidate.
Nope.
You don't need to. You need to donate to these. This is where it starts. This is where it starts. This is where we get better.
This is how we take the country back. This is how we do
it. That's how we do it. There's really not much more we need to add. You heard the story and you know who she is. Again, probably one of the most impactful and inspirational people. I mean, just to hear her and her attitude and how she started it and the dreams and, you know, one recruiter walking up to her door at no fault of the recruiter or anybody else, that's not my point, but made that decision. And then from there, you know, she's 3 days into Iraq and this had 3 days into Iraq and this happens.
You know, just basically made it through basic training. I mean, she had just... finish.
And it was over in Kuwait. And
you heard me ask it on the interview. It's 2001 is when she joined. So what month?
I know.
It's June.
June.
And we all know what happened. You know, because I thought maybe 9/11 happened and then they decided, let's do this.
Let's do it.
Like other brave Americans did. They're still brave. I mean, trust me, even the idiots that are in the military are still, they're still brave, right? Because there
She had a direct career path. She was set on, I'm going to be a kindergarten teacher in the town that I grew up in because of the impact that teacher made on her when she was in kindergarten, right? And then it changed. So it wasn't a 9/11. It was a great question to ask because when she said it, I was also wondering the same thing. So I appreciate you asking that. And no, it was peacetime. It was like, hey, this sounds like a good way where my parents don't have to pay for college. It's small town West Virginia. We know, you know.
Desert Storm is many years in the past.
Years in the past. So. You're in between, you know, nothing's happening. You're going to go and she's going to, you know, and then she ends up driving a truck, a rig, basically, folks, you know,
Just imagine, you and I talked about this. I don't know how many times you brought it up. I hope it didn't sound like we were gushing too much, but just anybody out there listening, picture yourself in that position and then coming home and going on with a normal life. I mean, there's not too many people that can do that.
Correct.
Not too many, but these soldiers seem to be able to do it.
Yeah, they seem to be able to do it.
They don't They don't blame God. They don't blame the world. They don't blame. They chose to do it. They chose and the sacrifice that they made.
Yeah,
that's what they did. They don't. Yeah. They don't. You know, some of them may do, but most of them they don't. They did it. And you ask them, "Do you regret it?" And I guarantee you, most of them will say, "Well, no. It's what I did. That's what my job was to do." And so, if you don't want to help them, like Dale said, get the F out. Just go. Out. Just go.
Just leave. Just leave. I want nothing to do with you. I want nothing to do with you. I don't want to hear a conversation from you. I don't want to hear your theories or your thoughts.
Just
get the F out of this country.
Amazing. Amazing person.
Yeah. Amazing person. And thank you again, Jessica. Really, one of the biggest honors in my life and probably yours. And that's not taking away from anybody else we've talked to. We've talked to so many great people. That's not the point. This one though, tops on my list for me. Sorry. That's who she is as a person and what she did for our country and went through. You heard before the interview, you saw the video of the rescue, the planning, the rescue, which was incredible, incredible footage, honestly. And remember, that's from back in that's 21 years ago. So
we all remembered it, right?
When you see it, you're like, I remember that scene. I remember that picture. What we're going to show you now to end the show is her testimony in front of Congress. I don't know if it was a year or two after she got back. I don't remember the year, and I apologize for that. But it was a while ago. To really stifle the false stories that came. I mean, they were making her out to a G.I. Jane, and she could have taken that. That's who she is. She could have taken that story and made basically a G.I. Jane movie out of it, right? But no, she wanted to set the record. That's who she is. And that's even more impressive.
She wanted to be respectful for the people that sacrificed for her and for the time. Now
those
she called
there,
heroes.
Those who captured, those who rescued.
She said the heroes that really did, helped her and did this and that. Mm-hmm. And you and I had to remind her she was a hero as well.
You too are a hero. Yes, you are.
So, that's a good point. And personally, I think what we're going to do is, and maybe not, I don't know if you have any other, but we should just leave it with that.
That time.
Lay it and then go, because there's nothing more to be said.
Nothing more to be said.
This is who she is.
It's who she is. Share this video. Watch it. Share it with everybody you know. It's that important.
Yes.
Jessica, thank you for both of us again. Here's that video. We'll talk to you all soon.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Chairman Waxman and distinguished members of the committee, it is an honor to be here with you today, and I'm grateful to have this opportunity.
I think you better pull a little closer. Okay, thanks.
Is that good?
That's good.
I have been asked here today to address misinformation from the battlefield. Quite frankly, it is something that I've been doing since I returned home from Iraq. However, I want to note for the record that I am not politically motivated in my appearance here today. I lived the war in Iraq. Today, I still have family and friends fighting in Iraq. My support for our troops is unwavering. I believe this is not a time for finger pointing. It is a time for truth, the whole truth, versus hype and misinformation. Because of the misinformation, people try to discount the realities of my story, including me as part of the hype. Nothing could be further from the truth. My experiences have caused a personal struggle of all sorts for me. I was given opportunities not extended to my fellow soldiers, and I embraced those opportunities to set the record straight. It is something that I have been doing since 2003, and something that I imagine I will have to do for the rest of my life. I have answered criticisms for being paid to tell my story. Quite frankly, the injuries I have will last a lifetime, and I had a story to tell, a story that needed to be told so people would know the truth. I want to take a minute to remind the committee of my true story. Now, I was a soldier. In July of 2001, I enlisted in the Army with my brother, Greg. We had different reasons of why to join, but we both knew that we wanted to serve our country. I loved my time in the Army, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to have served the country in a time of crisis. In 2003, I received word that I would be deployed. I was part of a 100-mile-long convoy going to Baghdad. I drove a 5-ton water buffalo truck. Our unit had some of the heaviest vehicles, and the sand was so thick that our vehicles would just sink. It would take us hours to just travel the shortest distance. We decided to divide our convoy up so the lighter vehicles could reach our destination. But first came the city of Nazaria, and a day that I will never forget. The truck I was driving broke down, and I was picked up by my roommate and best friend, Lori Paestua, who was driving our first sergeant, Robert Dowdy. We also picked up two other soldiers from a different unit to get them out of harm's way. As we drove through a Nazaria, trying to get turned around to leave the city, the signs of hostility were increasing. There were people with weapons on rooftops and street watching our entire move. The vehicle I was riding in was hit by a rocket-propelled grenade and slammed into the back of another truck in our unit. Three people in the vehicle were killed upon impact. Lori and I were taken to a hospital where she later died, and I was held for 9 days. In all, 11 soldiers died that day, six from my unit, and six others from my unit were taken prisoner, plus two others. Following the ambush, my injuries were extensive. When I awoke the Iraqi hospital, I was not able to move or feel anything below my waist. I suffered a 6-inch gash in my head. My fourth and fifth lumbar were overlapping, causing pressure on my spine. My right humerus was broken. My right foot was crushed. My left femur was shattered. The Iraqis in the hospital tried to help me by removing the bone and replacing it with a 1940s rod that was made for a man. Following my rescue, the doctors at Landstuhl, Germany, found in a physical exam that I had been sexually assaulted. Today, I still continue to deal with bowel, bladder, and kidney problems as a result from the injuries. My left leg still has no feeling from the knee down, and I'm required to wear a brace just to stand and walk. When I awoke, I did not know where I was. I could not move. I could not call for help. I could not fight. The nurses at the hospital tried to soothe me, and they even tried unsuccessfully at one point to return me to Americans. On April 1st, while various units created diversions around Nazaria, a group came to the hospital to rescue me. I could hear them speaking in English, but I was still very afraid. Then a soldier came into the room. He tore the American flag from his uniform, and he handed it to me in my hand. And he told me, "We're American soldiers, and we're here to take you home." And I looked at him, and I said, "Yes, I'm an American soldier, too." When I remember those difficult days, I remember the fear. I remember the strength. I remember that hand of that fellow American soldier reassuring me that I was going to be okay. At the same time, tales of great heroism were being told. At my parents' home in Work County, West Virginia, it was understaged by media, all repeating the story of the little girl Rambo from the hills of West Virginia who went down fighting. It was not true. I have repeatedly said when asked that if the stories about me helped inspire our troops and rally a nation, then perhaps there was some good. However, I'm still confused as to why they chose to lie and try to make me a legend when the real heroes of my fellow soldiers that day were legendary. People like Lori Paestua and First Sergeant Dowdy, who picked up fellow soldiers in harm's way, or people like Patrick Miller or Sergeant Donald Walters, who actually did fight until the very end. The bottom line is the American people are capable of determining their own ideals for heroes, and they don't need to be told elaborate lies. My hero is my brother Greg, who continues to serve his country today. My hero is my friend Lori Paestua, who died in Iraq but set an example for a generation of Hopi and Native American women and little girls everywhere about the contribution just one soldier can make. My hero is every American who says, "My country needs me," and answers that call to fight. I had the good fortune and opportunity to come home and to tell the truth. Many soldiers, like Pat Tillman, they did not have that opportunity. The truth of war is not always easy. The truth is always more heroic than the hype. Thank you.